Hi, I'm Emily Rawlings.
And I'm Kayla Connick. Welcome to Forget Dis, taking the dis out of disabilities.
We are music therapists from Dynamic Music Therapy in Las Vegas, Nevada. This podcast highlights people who live with unique challenges that they have transformed. We will meet people from different walks of life, discuss how music therapy can help in specific ways, and present how to and how not to talk to people with disabilities.
Thank you for joining us for our first episode, where we'll be featuring a local musician with a disability, Emily herself. But before we hear Emily's story, I would like to take a quick moment to explain what music therapy is. As two music therapists, Emily and I work with all ages and with all abilities in the Las Vegas area by using music as the medium to accomplish non-musical goals in all areas of functioning. By areas of functioning, I'm referring to cognition, social skills, behavior, physical functioning, and emotional processing. We focus on people's strengths and what they can do instead of their limitations, which is also why we are so passionate about hearing from people who thrive despite being told they're disabled. Without further ado, let's hear from Emily.
Hey, I'm so excited to be able to share myself with you today.
Well, it's very good to have you. How about you tell us a little bit about yourself first?
All right, so I am originally from Oregon. I grew up in a large family, a very musical family, and I have a number of disabilities. Some of them affect me in more pronounced ways than others, but I am hearing impaired. I am blind in my left eye, and I have some development challenges in my left arm, and so it's shorter than most, and I don't have a thumb on my left hand.
So what brought you to Las Vegas?
I had been studying music therapy in Oregon, and every music therapist needs to do an internship. And so I came to Las Vegas for my six-month internship, and I have just been here ever since. I have established myself, and now I am married and have two children, and so this is where I am.
So how did you find out about music therapy? What were your beginnings there?
So like I said, I came from a very musical family, and initially, I started out at college studying music performance, and it just didn't quite sit right with me. And so after a few years of floundering, I discovered music therapy, and it just seemed to be the perfect marriage between music and helping people, and that really spoke to me.
So speaking of music, what kind of music do you listen to?
You know, I think a lot of it, a lot of my preferences are shaped by my disability of hearing impairment. So I actually far prefer music without words. So for that reason, I like classical, I like jazz, I like instrumental Irish music, instrumental Greek music, lots of different world music that doesn't have the words that I don't always know what people are saying.
So as a music therapist and businesswoman, what are some of the challenges that you faced along the way?
Goodness, there are quite a number of those. I think that as a music therapist, obviously the hearing impairment is a major challenge. As a musician, my thumb presented me a lot of challenges growing up in learning the instruments. Now it's not, because I'm there. It's like tying a shoe. Once you get it, you know how to do it.
Right.
As a music therapist, though, I continually have a challenge with my hearing, especially if something happens with my hearing aid. I am far more deaf without my hearing aid. And when you are interacting with people that are used to you hearing them, it makes it a lot more challenging. The unique thing, though, about music therapy is that we can overcome that and still engage in the music without having to actually talk. Yeah. So I don't actually need my hearing as much when we're just engaging in the music in that way.
Yeah.
There was an instance when I was on my internship where my hearing aid broke. And as I was just coming into the field, it was actually a huge self-insight moment for me, because I thought, oh no, I can't do this. How am I supposed to do this? Oh my goodness, did I just pick the wrong field? Because what if I went further deaf? I mean, I just screwed myself. How am I supposed to be a music therapist? This isn't gonna work. And I panicked. And then I went and I had a session, and it was wonderful. Why? Because I just went to the music more, and we had more of a nonverbal opportunity to engage with each other. And some really huge things happen in those moments. It actually was very eye-opening for me, because I realized, hey, I can be a music therapist. It doesn't matter that I'm hearing impaired. I can be a music therapist, and I can actually be a really good music therapist, because I have disabilities too. So when I'm working with other people who have these different challenges, I can relate to them in a lot more intimate way.
Yeah, so that was actually one of my next questions was, do you feel like you're... So we hear it. Dynamic music therapy, we serve people with multiple disabilities. Do you feel that your clients are able to trust you more or relate to you more in these ways?
Yeah, I really think so. Sometimes it doesn't really make too much of an impact, but sometimes it really does. For example, when I work with people with autism, sometimes people with autism, we perceive that they're not as aware of their environment. They seem to be more involved in them, in their own mind. So I actually use my lack of thumb as a diagnostic tool sometimes. Kids are absolutely fascinated with the fact that I don't have a thumb. It's just, it's fascinating. They look at it and they're like, whoa, where's your
thumb? And children can just be so brutally honest too. And there's no filter there really.
I get this all the time. Where children be like, where's your thumb? Why don't you have a thumb? And the parents are like, shh.
Gasp.
And I'm like, no, it's okay. They're just curious. They can ask me. I don't have a problem with that. You know, especially when it comes from an innocent state. They're just asking. They want to understand their world. So they're very fascinated by it. So when someone with autism who doesn't seem to be paying attention to life as it exists around them notice my thumb, they go, oh. And they just look and look and look. And a lot of times they'll take my hand and just like move it back and forth. And then they'll look at their own hand and, oh, there's something different here. And I like to believe that it actually makes a difference in our relationship. Something often clicks after that point, where in our relationship we connect on a different level. It's like they're thinking, oh, I'm different, but so is she. So maybe she can understand my different a little bit more than most people. And I think that that is a really powerful opportunity for me to be able to relate to people in my work.
So aside from working with clients and children with autism, do you have any other kind of interactions on a daily basis with adults, other people that kind of ask you questions or seemingly have these perceptions of you? Is there anything you'd kind of like to dispel right now or tell people?
That's an interesting question. A lot of my disabilities are fairly invisible. People don't actually know. If they don't know me, then they can't necessarily see, unless they're very observant, that I don't have a thumb or that I'm wearing a hearing aid. A number of years ago, there was an episode on CSI where a deaf boy was killed. And I don't remember all the details, so forgive me if I get it wrong a little bit. But from what I remember is some kids were driving down the road and they yelled at this deaf boy and he didn't respond because he didn't hear them. And the original kids that were yelling got mad and they beat up this kid and killed him, not realizing that they were not actually getting snubbed, that he just simply did not know that they were trying to talk to him. And I think about that all the time. I wonder how many people in my life, even people that know me but forget that I'm hearing impaired, because it happens all the time, see me in the grocery store and call out to me, "Hey, Emily," and I don't respond because I don't hear them. How many of them actually think that I'm snubbing them?
Right.
Instead of realizing, oh, yeah, maybe she didn't hear me.
Well, even as a non-hearing impaired person, that's a legitimate worry of mine as well. I always wonder, like, oh, am I, you know, hearing well? Am I appearing rude or what? So what is your biggest pet peeve when it comes to people, or sorry, how people interact with you?
I think that all of us, when we speak, nobody enunciates absolutely perfectly. And so we're missing some vowels, we're missing some consonants in there. And every human being will hear some holes, but our brain kind of fills in the spaces of what makes sense in the context of the conversation. For me, as a hearing impaired individual, there's generally more holes. And so sometimes there's a little bit of a delay from when I understand, when my brain can make sense of those holes. Then, if I really can't figure out what was said, I'll ask someone to repeat themselves. One of two things happens. Let's say that they said, "Hey, do you want to go to the store with me?" And I didn't hear what they said. So I'll say, "What?" And they'll say, "I was wondering if you wanted to go to the store with me." And then my brain will sit there and go, "But that's not what they said. That's not the exact phrase that was said." My right. brain
the syllables are different. Yeah, yeah, there's the rhythm is off. Yeah.
I'm like, "No, that wait, what?" Cuz my brain is still trying to figure out the holes. Another thing is when they assume that I don't actually understand, like I'm stupid. Mm-hmm. And so they'll explain it instead of just say it again.
Yeah. Or if they say it angrier than they did before.
Yes.
They kind of have like a little bit of an attitude now, or, you know, louder doesn't necessarily mean angrier.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's really annoying too. It's like, yeah. "I'm so sorry that I have this disability that you have to deal right. with now."
It's like, it's not, yeah, you're not at fault for not communicating properly. Jeez. Sorry to insult your ego. So you've talked with me a bit about the challenges that you faced as a music therapist, but what about as a businesswoman?
I think one of the biggest challenges for me lies in my hearing impairment, and that is talking on the phone. I absolutely do not like talking on the phone. A lot of people don't, but for me, it seems to be extra hard because of the challenge in hearing what's going on the other end. I do a lot of lip reading. I do a lot of body language reading, and that helps shape, set the tone for me. I can see, oh, they're angry or they're being sarcastic, and I can understand those better because I don't necessarily hear the nuances of speech as much. Mm-hmm. So on the phone, you don't have those. And when you're talking to someone brand new that you don't know at all, it's extra awkward. I always get hung up when someone asks me, I always get hung up when someone says something to me that I don't hear. And then I think, okay, well, I have to ask them to repeat themselves. Do I tell them that I'm hearing impaired? I mean, this is a person that's inquiring about services. Am I going to ruin my chances by telling them that I'm deaf before establishing the fact that I am a competent music therapist? Are they going to shut their mind to that? I worry that people think, oh, well, she's deaf. How can she possibly be a good musician? It's probably just me, but it is still something that hangs me up a lot.
So would you mind actually playing some instruments today?
Oh, sure.
And showing us kind of how you can play music.
Yeah, definitely. I actually really love to improvise. And when I do so, I like to have a theme. So the theme that I'm choosing for today is remembering a recent trip that I had with my family. My family is very important to me. And we went to Oregon, where I'm from, and we got to go to Silver Creek Falls, and it was just a really wonderful experience as a family, and it's such a beautiful place. So that's what I'm going to share with you today.
that was an awesome improvisation. The fact that you can just sit down and play something so beautiful. And I can really hear what you were talking about earlier, how it relates back to your family in Oregon. So tell me more about the challenges that you faced learning music.
So like I said, I came from a very musical family. My dad sings and plays the piano and guitar, and all of us children, there were 10 of us in my family, all of us learned an instrument or sang or both. I'm pretty sure that all of us took at least a year or two of piano, and then some of us continued, and then many of us went on to another instrument as well. So I learned the piano when I was 8. I started playing the piano at that age, and I had a really great teacher who would help me adapt my fingering to learn the songs at the very beginning. And it actually, I think, made me a stronger musician. I didn't have to focus so much on the struggle of playing the exact finger that's written on the page, because I could play whatever finger made sense in the left hand. And so it allowed me to focus a little bit more on musicality. And then as I progressed a little bit more and got to passages that, like, legitimately could not play, definitely cannot play an octave in my left hand, there's just not enough span, I had to learn, okay, so what of this passage do I need to play, and what can be left out and still keep the integrity of the piece? And so it actually helped me become a stronger musician because of it. I understood music better. So I am actually really grateful that I don't have a thumb in that way, because it shaped me to become that. When I was in fourth grade, I wanted to be in the orchestra, because fourth grade is orchestra, fifth grade is band, and I didn't want to wait that long. So I wanted to be in the orchestra. And my teacher was concerned because of the rotation challenges in my left arm. I wanted to play the violin, and she was concerned that that just wouldn't work. So I thought, well, I'll play the cello. But she was concerned that I was too small and that my back wouldn't be able to handle it, because I have developing scoliosis, and so there's some issues there. And so I was like, oh, okay. And so I waited for the band, and it kind of bothered me for a long time, and it took me a while to give voice to my bother. Like, why did that bother me so much? And it occurred to me, I had let someone tell me that I couldn't do something because of my disability, and nobody had ever done that before. My piano teacher had been fine with it. My parents had been fine with it. They're like, sure, you can still do it. No problem. And ever since then, if anybody has attempted to do that, I don't let them. Of course I can do it. Yeah, I could do it differently sometimes, or I have to approach it in a different way. But I don't like it when people tell me that I can't do something because of my disability.
Yeah, and it's important that you bring that up too, because it seems to be about, we don't want to ever tell people, no, you cannot do that, and to be the person to impede any kind of true potential. So it's about finding, and it seems too that it allowed you to find a better way to do something, a better way mm-hmm. to play the instrument, a better way to become the best musician that you can be.
Yeah.
So you must also have some pretty interesting stories.
Definitely. I couldn't even begin to scratch the surface. A couple, though, immediately come to my mind, and it cracks me up even just thinking about it. One of my friends and I were on the way to help another family mow the lawn, and we knew that this family had a riding lawnmower and a push lawnmower, and so on the way over, we were arguing about who got what. Now, you would think that we'd be arguing about who got to actually sit in the riding lawnmower, right?
Right, that's the cool mower. Yeah.
Right, exactly. But no, we were arguing the other way, because we were trying to be all, like, kind and stuff. So I was like, no, it's okay. You can have the riding lawnmower. I'll do the push mower. And she was just adamant, like, no, I will do the push mower, and you can ride. It's fine. And I couldn't figure out why it was such a big deal to her. And then after a couple minutes of silence, she just starts busting up laughing. And I was like, what? And she's like, I can't get over the image. I mean, you're sitting there and one arm's longer than the other. And so you're sitting there trying to use the push lawnmower and it's not straight. It's going round and round and round and round in circles. And it was like, aww. Oh my goodness, Tony. No, I am capable of pushing a lawnmower in a straight line. You know, this same friend, she actually made me a really thoughtful gift once, because I always hated gloves because you have to like stuff the thumb, the fabric part of the thumb inside the glove. Otherwise, it just flaps around and it's just annoying. And so she actually bought me a pair of gloves and then cut off the thumb on the left side. Aww. And sewed it up.
Wow, that is very thoughtful.
Right? You know, and I had some people that were like, oh, that was really tacky of her to do that. And I was like, what? Why? No, it was completely thoughtful.
Yeah, it's funny to see, too, what might seem to offend other people is totally like, no, that's, I like that thought.
Yeah, definitely.
That's fine.
She knows me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing that that's really important to me, is that I'm okay being called hearing impaired. You know, they have that people first language versus, you know, it's a person with a hearing impairment, mm-hmm. or someone who has autism rather than an autistic or a deaf person or whatever. But I'm okay being called hearing impaired. Yeah, it's not all I am, but it does shape me a lot. It's part of me. It's who I am. And so I have absolutely no problem with people bringing up my hearing impairment or my lack of thumb or whatever. I just thought of another pet peeve that just bugs me.
Yes. Do tell.
Yeah. It doesn't really happen anymore. But when I was developing as a pianist, kind of in my teenage years, when I started to show that I was actually pretty good, people would say, wow, you're a really good pianist for not having a thumb. You throw good for a girl.
That's exactly what that is, yeah.
Right? You know, and I was just like, no, I am a good pianist.
Regardless, period. Yeah.
Regardless. It's even awesomer that I do it without a thumb, but I am a good pianist, period, right? Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of about crossing that line, too, of like over kind of compensating for seeing somebody's disability, thinking like, oh, wow, you're so brave. Look right? at you. Gosh, oh wow. I couldn't even imagine. Oh, my God. They start crying.
Yeah. Right? And, you know, and a lot of that is going to come up later in our podcast series about what is okay to talk about. What is okay to say to people and what is not okay to say to people with disabilities.
Okay, we'll definitely hear plenty more of their pet peeves and kind of just laughable perceptions that people have of people with disabilities.
Right.
So, Emily, what are your plans for the future?
You know, I am really excited about growing dynamic music therapy. I've been in business for about 7 years now, six. I've been in business for about 6 years now, and now that you're on board, we really have a lot of opportunity to grow things and be able to serve more people in Las Vegas. I'm just really excited to be able to expand on our mission. It's also really important to me to focus on my family. I really love my daughters. I have a three-year-old and a six-month-old right now, and they're just adorable. Fortunately, my husband is able to stay at home with them, and that's a wonderful opportunity. But I just really want to just be able to continue to be a music therapist and continue to be a mom.
So what is the most important thing you want people to take away today?
I think what I want people with disabilities to hear the most is, don't let anybody tell you that you can't because of your disability. You might have to do it a little bit differently, or it might take a little longer to get there, but you can do it. For people that don't have disabilities, what I want them to hear the most is presume competence of the other person. If they have a disability, presume that they're capable of overcoming.
Thank you so much for sharing with us today and being here and teaching us about yourself and what you are able to do. Next episode, we're going to learn how to talk to blind dudes with special guests John Rawlings and Brett Silver. Until next time, this has been Forget Dis.